With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Oh, welcome to Behind the Bastards, yeah. The only podcast with the personality of a staph infection.
No, that's just me, Robert.
Yeah, we're reading a one-star review from iTunes.
You're just an annoying lip smacker who needs to do better.
Look, for one thing, is it bad? Is a staph infection bad? There's upsides to staph infections.
That's true. You get time
off of work.
Cool photographs.
You have to, if you die, deal with a lot less bullshit on Twitter, you know? So again, right. Staph infections are a really mixed bag. There's positive sides to
it's
staph
honestly
infections, you know?
So fucking funny, and I have no idea what it means, that I'm like not even mad. Like
it's extreme. It's
It's clever.
It's fun to get roasted like that, where you're like, that's very funny.
Where you're like, I'm not quite sure what you mean, but you're not wrong.
Right, it flows. It's like the words flow, and it just, it's like,
I like a good, it's like when you, well, I'm getting into dangerous territory here, but when you read people being like super shitty on some level from like 150 years ago, and it's like, well, this is sexist or racist, but man, people could put together sentences back then. Like, that's not a bad sentence, you know? Like, it's horrible, but it's not a bad sentence.
Right, people used to, These shit posts were a lot more eloquent.
Put a lot more work into their shit posts.
Yeah,
it's like H.P. Lovecraft racism. Well, it's like, this is terrible, but man, quite a phrase.
Wow, way to create an entire lore around your racism.
Exactly. That's so much more effort than people put into it these days.
Right.
David Bell.
That's me.
That's you. Dave, you know
what? I don't know.
You know, Dave.
Okay.
You know.
I think Dave is going to love this topic.
I hope he does. I hope he loves it, and I hope you hate it, Sophie.
Okay.
I'm just an asshole. I'm a bad person. Mm-hmm. Just biting the hand that stops me from committing a series of crimes that get us arrested in our podcast shutdown. Dave,
hi.
How do you feel about reality TV?
Okay, mixed feelings.
Yeah, that's the right way to feel.
I don't watch most. I don't find it interesting, but I don't have anything against it unless something horrible was done behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah.
It's like if there's consent and everybody's cool, then we're good. We're good.
Yeah.
I do like the occasional like British Bake Off, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't consider reality TV.
Some might. I mean, it is. Say,
it's unscripted.
But yeah. Am I right in saying that reality TV does have the personality of a staph infection?
Yes.
Yes.
It does. Yes.
Where it's gross and infectious.
But also, you might get to take some time off of work, you
which
know,
is
to
great.
Enjoy it. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not going to do this thing. This is going to be kind of a loosey-goosey episode. We're doing this right after the Kissinger episodes. Everybody's tired. I'm not going to be one of these smarmy fucks who's just like shitting on the concept of reality TV to seem smart, right? Reality TV is, broadly speaking, it's junk food. You know, it is not good for you. But that said, I do a shitload of things that are bad for me.
Yeah, I would also argue that it's not new.
No.
Like, game shows have always existed.
There's always entertainment junk food. Like, that fucking piece of trash Mozart, right? Like, he's shit. Everyone knows he's shit. But, people like to enjoy shit, and that's fine. I like the Bloodhound Gang, you know? Like, nobody in this show is going to be like... Again, there's nothing bad or like you're not dumb because some of the smartest people I know like turn off from like getting their PhD or whatever and like watch, you know, a Bake Off show or like Big Brother or some shit. It's fine.
Listen, when we're done here, I will be going online and ordering the 4K release of Moonfall. I will be doing that and I will watch the special features.
I mean, Dave, you've watched shit with me. One of my favorite things to put on is people hurting themselves horribly while skiing or base jumping.
Yes.
And I have since expanded to wingsuit crashes, some of which the people die in. There's some gnarly wingsuit crash videos if you look.
That's the old pink mist. But
baby.
Yeah. Have you looked into parkour accidents?
Oh, parkour accidents are great. If you really want to be harrowed, just type gun fails into YouTube. There's some shit in there. Oh my God. There's this video.
Wander onto Live Leak and just Google and like type in gun fails.
Yeah. There's some nasty. There's a dude who like put a bunch of Tannerite, which is this explosive. You shoot it and it blows up on a fucking lawnmower and shot it at close range and the blade cut his leg off. Like it's.
Of course
there's some shit. So again, I'm saying this all not to celebrate my own crapulence, but like we all like some stuff that's the entertainment equivalent of like junk food, right? So this isn't an episode about like I'm not trying to make the case that like reality TV is bad and you should feel bad for watching it. This is about the most fucked up things that have ever happened within the broad umbrella of reality or what you might call unscripted content. There's not a particular thesis here. I just spent a lot of time reading about the worst things that have happened in reality TV and I decided to do a podcast. None of you can stop me, so deal with it. We'll probably do another episode in the future with more of these stories.
This is exciting.
Yeah. Before we start, I want to share my very favorite reality television story. And this is a story about a reality TV show I enjoyed. So when I was in Iraq, this is like the second or the third, might've been the fourth time. I forget exactly which time it was. But we're like, you know, when you're hanging out in a place like that, we're like going to refugee camps and like frontline positions. And in order to get to both, you have to spend time in like a bunch of random living rooms. Cause that's where everyone's like posted up. The leaders of these camps, these like different generals and shit, they're all like hanging out in houses. And so while you're waiting to get approval to go places, you're just like sitting in like usually an air conditioned living room with the TV on and a bunch of like guys with their guns and phones out and shit. And one of the times we were out there, the same reality show kept going on. It came on in like two or three different places. And I don't know what the name of this show is. I have not, brief Googling has not informed me of it, but the premise was that there was this host who would like take a rich guy out to the desert. Like they would be like driving in a caravan and there would be a contrived accident. And like one of the cases I remember, this guy's like in a little motorcade and they get stuck in quicksand and his vehicle sinks and he has to like get out and he's like on top of the vehicle. And while that's happening, the host dressed as a Komodo dragon comes out and attacks them.
Holy shit.
It was fucking insane. Like, I don't know what was... I'm sure there's elements of this that I was not grasping because there were no subtitles and I do not speak Arabic. But it was some of the wildest shit I've watched on TV. It was so good.
I don't know what's scarier, being attacked by a Komodo dragon or a man dressed like one, because they're both very
it was
sinister.
A pretty good costume.
Yeah. Oh my god, it sounds like it's like Survivor Man or Man versus Wild.
I don't know what the point was supposed to be, because on all of them, people just like react the way you would if you saw a Komodo dragon.
Right.
Just this, like, oh dear.
God damn. Like, we America can't talk, but we're like assimilated to our weirdness.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same as when you watch like the Japanese pranks shows. Like,
yeah.
The Silent Library, where it's like, you have to be quiet in a library and they just like do fucked up shit to you. And if you make a noise, you lose. And it's like, that actually, I think, got an American adaptation. But like, it's that extra context of not understanding the language, or that extra layer that's like, makes it so perfect and bizarre. Oh man, I want to watch that so bad.
I love that shit. Yeah. Someone will find it now that we've talked about it, and we'll find the clips. Please do. I would love to watch it again.
Please.
Anyway, Dave, on January 11th, 1973, PBS began to air the first of 12 hour-long episodes of An American Family, a television documentary about the Louds, an actual family, and this is probably the very first reality show in history. Now, the Louds were upper middle class and lived in Santa Barbara, and over 300 hours of raw footage of them was shot between May 30th and December 31st, 1971. The initial intent was just to kind of chronicle their daily lives, but during filming, the relationship between spouses Bill and Pat Loud broke down, and the show ends with both parents divorcing.
Ooh.
Cameras actually caught Pat asking for a divorce on camera. She tells Bill, "You know there's a problem," and he responds, "What's your problem?" This was picked by TV Guide as one of the top 100 TV moments of all time. And in some ways, viewers have never moved on from the concept of watching unscripted life moments from rich people in California, right? Like, this is, broadly speaking, still the heart of reality TV.
What do you think, and I don't know the answer to this, would they have had that divorce if they weren't on camera?
Who knows? I have not watched the 12 hours of the Louds.
It's the double slit theory of like, when observed, will they divorce?
It
like,
can't help, right?
It can't help. It probably gives people just a more sense of like, I want drama in my life. I'm being videotaped all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you start like thinking of your life like a TV show, I imagine.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it could like make it easier for a trouble within a marriage to get solved. But that said, I don't know anything about this particular couple. But it's worth noting that like reality TV does not start far from where it is now, right? Like this is still the heart of the genre. So An American Family is hugely successful, and it immediately spawns an imitation by the BBC called just The Family. Now, An American Family is particularly notable because the Loud family's oldest son, Lance, was probably the world's first openly gay TV star. Like, he's open about being gay in the show in like 1973, which is pretty groundbreaking for the time.
Right.
And he dies during the AIDS epidemic, which is, you know, there's a whole, is an interesting person whose life to study, right? This show and he, like, there's nothing particularly problematic here. It's just an interesting piece of history.
I mean, it's your typical reality TV coming from PBS and BBC, as we all know.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah. Classic reality TV stations.
So in the years that followed, the series went through the normal life cycle of a successful show. There's a handful of parodies, right? Like a bunch of different like sketch shows do parodies of An American Family. There's like jokes and sitcoms of the day about moments that have happened in the show. And then 10 years after it airs, there's an attempted reboot that doesn't do very well, right? Nothing at all weird here. This is like more or less what happens with every successful show.
Sure.
Most folks probably figured that was kind of it for the genre, which had yet to be named. People didn't talk about reality TV as a thing. There was just this one weird show that had existed. Mm. But a few perceptive individuals at the time recognized that something special was afoot. Anthropologist Margaret Mead published an essay in TV Guide. The New Yorker writes, quote, Her contribution, which wasn't mentioned on the cover, appeared in the back of the magazine after the listings, tucked between an advertisement for Virginia Slims and a profile of Shelley Winters. Bill and Pat Loud and their five children are neither actors nor public figures, Mead wrote. Rather, they were the people they portrayed on television, members of a real family. Producers compressed 7 months of tedium and turmoil into 12 one-hour segments, which constituted, in Mead's view, a new kind of art form, an innovation as significant as the invention of drama or the novel. And I think that's true no matter how you like reality TV. Like,
of course.
It's hit that point of cultural relevance already. It's had that impact. We have the Trump presidency because of reality TV, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The biggest shame about reality TV is when it's staged, right? Like,
yeah.
It's the same appeal as a documentary.
We'll get into that, but yeah. But I think that is interesting, though, just looking at it as like, it's like the birth of the novel, you know?
It'll be with us for a long time.
Oh yeah, forever.
And it'll be so broad that I think it's like any genre where it sort of mixes with other genres, you know?
Yeah.
You could argue that just what we're doing, like TikTok, and like the YouTubes and so on, are offshoots of reality TV because we're following people's lives. People are kind of filming genuine moments, staged moments. It's all part of the same thing.
Yeah, and you know, it's like with novels, there's this, you know, there's horrible things you can tie to novels, you know. Hitler was very influenced by the novels of Karl May.
Right.
We probably
novels
don't have
caused Hitler. You're
yeah,
right.
Novels caused Hitler. We probably don't have the Bosnian genocide without the Pelican Brief, obviously.
Right.
You know, but also there's good things that novels have brought us too. Probably one assumes good things. I don't read books. You know.
Right, but I do watch Jack Ryan movies.
I do watch Jack Ryan movies, which have influenced my life in a number of ways.
Yeah, and I've been told those started as some sort of book.
Yeah, the Jack Reacher series really helped me make peace with the fact that I'm incredibly jacked. You know, there's a lot of people,
it's really hard to be like a jacked white dude.
Exactly, exactly. Finally, representation.
Exactly. It's wonderful.
Yeah. This, just like the... Yeah. Anyway, whatever. This bit's gone on long enough. So
yes, it has.
So it's interesting then that it takes... like Margaret Mead's right about how influential this art medium is going to be. And it's interesting that it takes like 20 years from the first reality TV show before it turns into anything.
Yeah.
Like we have this idea for a long time before people figure out what to do with it.
That happened sort of with found footage as well.
Yeah.
Because there was some found footage films and then we kind of went quiet and then the Blair Witch Project brought it back. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Finally, which is, again, one of the great works of humanitarian.
Right.
Yeah. The Blair Witch Project, without which, I don't know.
We wouldn't have,
genocide
the VHS
joke
movies.
For me. Yeah. 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 We wouldn't have the VHS movies, which have solved world hunger.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So the first show to take reality TV forward was The Real World, which debuted in MTV in 1992. Rather than watching a family live their life and risk the chance that it might be boring, MTV decided to throw a bunch of young adults in a house and film what happened. The show was successful, but it also was not like the kind of successful that on its own was going to spawn a world like changing industry, you know,
right.
You know, The Real World is kind of a proof of concept, but it's not as influential as some later things are going to be. The key to transmuting these peculiar documentary style shows into the thing that devoured television happened to be held in the head of a Fox executive named Mike Darnell. Prior to 2000, Mike's background had been producing shows like When Animals Attack, World's Scariest Police Chases, and a variety of other premises now met by random weirdos on YouTube, right? Like, all the shows he gets started with are like the things I watch on random YouTubers collect.
Yeah, remember America's Funniest Home Videos where it's like, that's YouTube.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can watch people getting hit in the balls. And it's like, we want that. I would argue reality TV is better than like When Animals Attack, because that was just YouTube, but it was YouTube done in this like really serious tone.
Yeah.
I don't know if you like, I actually would see, you could see people like attack videos on When Animals Attack would get reused on like World's Funniest Animals, and they would just cover it in a different tone. and like not mention the injuries, you know, like because they just, it didn't matter. It was just, it was so schlocky. At least reality TV had like, I don't know, people involved, a little more drama.
Yeah, and I think like, because also I always felt gross about like America's Funniest, like a lot of these different video shows, less America, but like a lot of them would have like narration that was like generally kind of mean-spirited towards the people. And I think it's right. much better to just have context-free loops of videos of people hurting themselves. That's right. fine.
And it was a whole industry that, yeah, YouTube pretty much killed.
It is kind of funny the degree to which that used to be the dominant thing on TV, and now Heck. It's just random dudes. One of my favorite YouTubers is the Car Crash Channel, which is just compilations of car accidents.
Right. Yeah, what else? Like, you don't need a commentary.
No, man. I don't need a word from anybody.
No, you just get in bed, put on the car crashes, and go mm-hmm. to sleep.
Go to sleep to the car crashes. Yeah. I love sleeping to train crashes. There's nothing mm-hmm. as soothing as watching a train hit a box truck.
Yeah.
It just goes poof.
Yep. Just like your dreams. It just sends you, right into the land of dreams.
Deeply soothing. So, yeah. Darnell is also the mind behind a 2-hour special. So, you know, this is how he gets to start doing these, like, when animals attack. But then near the end of the 1990s, he has an idea for a 2-hour TV special with the title, Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire? So this is going to be the show that births all of modern reality TV, really. It airs on Fox on February 15th, 2000. In her book, Reality Bites Back, Jennifer Posner describes it this way. The special, which predated the game-changing Survivor, was a hybrid of Miss America and Mail Order Bride Parade. With executive producer Mike Fleiss of Next Entertainment, Darnell brought 50 brides-to-be to Las Vegas to be auctioned off to a complete stranger. They sashayed in swimsuits, tittered nervously, and answered pageant-style questions to assess their moral fortitude and sexual prowess in 30 seconds or less. Groom Rick Rockwell was hidden as he and the audience determined who deserved the biggest prize of all, a brand-new multimillionaire husband. Nurse and future Playboy centerfold Darva Conger, Rockwell's eventual choice, got her first glimpse of her fiancé moments before they were legally wed on air. Nearly 23 million viewers tuned in.
It's funny how when read that academically, it really is horrifying.
It's a nightmare, right? Yeah. Like that's like a like an auctioning human beings off to a rich man.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's one of those where you just like, hey, you had to be there, mm-hmm. I guess. It's like,
I think if you were there, a lot of people at the, but no, but it was hugely successful.
People were horrified there too. Yeah.
But they were they watched it.
Yeah, reality TV created, I think, more than most things, the hate watch, right?
Yes. Oh God, yes. Yeah. Yes. So the series got a 28 share, which is basically is a big hit in terms people don't use as much anymore to talk about success because streaming is kind of like, yeah. who gives a shit about those old terms? But anyway, it's a big hit. Mike Darnell declared it the best show ever, or Chris Darnell. I think it was Chris. Shit.
How many Darnells we got here? What's
Mike?
Going on?
No, it is. I think they're both Mikes. Are they both Mikes? I think they're both Mikes.
I mean, they're TV executives. Yeah. It all checks out.
Mike Fleiss, who's the producer, later bragged, Mike and I knew that the National Organization for Women would hate us, that this would be the most controversial show ever. We thought it was all good, but it got so hot, so crazy red hot. They said it was the most talked about show since Roots. It was the lead sketch on Saturday Night Live.
The most talked about show also, since Roots.
Hey, maybe your reality show that involves auctioning human beings shouldn't be compared to Roots.
Yeah, no.
you might not want to be drawing attention to that, buddy.
Yeah. No, this also begins this problem, which is it's kind of resonates all the way to the internet, obviously, which is like, ooh, they're talking about us. And it's like,
yeah
that doesn't, you know, that's not a good measurement of whether or not something's good or not.
But I mean, it is for their purposes because it's a measurement of whether or not something can be worth money to advertisers, which is all that matters now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of advertisers, Dave.
Oh, no.
You know what? We can say whatever we want on this show because it gets advertisers. So I can say, for example, Dave, that has an island off the coast of Indonesia where you can grab a crude weapon, spear, you know, a club, you know, rock. Like you'd use on a seal, a rock, and you can hunt children in the open preserves that they keep on this island, and they'll get cooked for you. You don't have to cook the child brisket yourself. Takes care
great.
Of that.
That's
I know.
Great.
It's the how opposite, actually, of how normally works.
Yeah, right. But that's yeah. that's kind of the appeal there.
That's the
right?
appeal, right? Normally, sends you the ingredients and you cook it. On the child hunting island, you provide the ingredients and cooks the food.
Right, because that's the most fun part of that process, mm-hmm. of the mm-hmm. child hunting process.
Right.
How much does it cost? What does it go for?
Oh, I mean, you have to donate a significant amount to Koch Industries. But really, Dave, can you put a price on hunting children on an island off the coast of Indonesia?
I mean, no, but also yes if you're right?
Like they do. Yeah. They do. But if you sign up for their mealbox plan, you'll be entered into a raffle to win a spot on the next yacht over to the child hunting island, which is worth quite a bit. So here's our sponsors. Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halper.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back, and we're talking about the only mattress made entirely with linen stolen from the graves of dead Egyptian peasants. That's right. Well, is named because the ghost of dead Egyptian peasants lingers inside each mattress. You know, that's the guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, what are they doing with all that linen?
Nothing. There nothing. Dead? Tons of wasted linen.
Yeah, that sounds super sustainable.
Yeah,
good exactly. for the environment.
Exactly. There's so much carbon wasted by getting linen that doesn't come from Egyptian peasants who were buried in lost desert cities.
Right.
Steals those corpses and passes the carbon savings on to you.
Yeah, it's convenient. It's good for the environment.
It's great for the environment.
Yeah, and it's affordable. Is there a promo code? Can we make it even more affordable?
Yeah, promo code bastards, and they'll throw in a free ounce of mummy dust, which if my 1890s medical textbooks are anything to go by, is useful in a variety of ailments, Dave.
Yeah, you can at least snort it.
Got the grip. You've got the shallots, the shingles. It'll cure them all. Mummy dust.
Yep, sprinkle it on your mac and cheese. It's delicious.
That was like 3.5 minutes of a
how we do it. Are you happy, Sophie?
Did
you get what you wanted?
I said that bit's getting old, so you made a worse one. Yeah, it's great.
that's how what I've been doing since the bit, Sophie.
Yeah. I missed the bit.
Well, too bad. So you probably won't be surprised to learn, Dave, that a show that was premised on basically taking the idea of an arranged marriage and making it television would turn out to have been unethical in some way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they do this whole competition, right? Some lady wins this marriage to this fucking multimillionaire Rockwell, but they never consummate their marriage. And for a very good reason. The woman Conjure has it annulled because she learns that Rockwell has a long history of violence against women. Mm. So... you know, good call on her part. It comes out like right as the show comes out that his former girlfriend had filed a restraining order against him for vandalizing her car, breaking into her home, and repeatedly physically assaulting her.
Good God.
She stated, "He said he would find me and kill me." Also, Rockwell's not a multimillionaire. But that hardly seems like the primary issue here.
Right. Who would have thought that a guy who goes on a TV show to like essentially buy a woman from an auction would be a liar and a violent abuser? Who would have thought?
Who would guess? Scumbag.
Yeah.
Yeah. So his former girl, so all this hits the press right after the show comes out, and it's a big problem for Fox because, again, this is 2000, so there was just a little bit of shame left in the world.
This was back when we cared.
It was like the reservoirs in Southern California. There was still this like tiny layer of water.
Right,
it's not going to be there in a couple of years, you know,
the hope.
Just like
it's the
water
hope.
In Southern California, but it was still a little bit there now.
Yeah.
You could kind of see the boats that didn't really have enough water, but there was at least something, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You could pretend like, oh, it's just a dry spot.
The rain will come back. It'll be all right. Yeah.
It'll be fine. Yeah.
So there's a little bit of shame, and it causes a problem for Fox. Darnell tells a reporter, "This is the worst day of my life."
Wow.
What a great guy. He gets excoriated by media, who, by the way, like all of these journalists yelling at them, were a lot of the same people who had been like raving over how groundbreaking the show was and who would go on to celebrate other horrible reality thing, so whatever. But in private, like he pretends that this is a horrible day for him. In public, in private, he is ecstatic. Fleiss later recalled that his first reaction was, quote, "Great, more publicity," Mike said. "We gotta get out in front of this." I'm like, absolutely, fuck, it's a restraining order. Let's get an interview with the girl. We'll put it on as part of the special. We had a whole plan because that's the way we like it.
Because that's the way we like it.
What an amazing kind of dude.
I love it because we had it all as a plan because, and then something in the shame center of his brain like kicked in and like turned it into, because that's the way we like it. Because that is just his ego protecting himself from something he knows, I think, somewhere deep in him.
You shouldn't do this.
Yeah. Yeah. That he is a bad person.
Yeah. When you become aware that on your show where women are auctioned off to the highest bidder, the guy buying the auction was a spousal abuser on a horrific kind of level of abuse and also lying about being rich, you should be like, well, maybe I should rethink some things about, like, not just the show, but my life, you know?
And, here's the thing, is that I don't know much about how the biz works, specifically the reality TV biz, but I imagine that when you're casting reality TV, you're looking for outrageous people who are willing to do whatever on camera.
Yes.
And I'm not saying they all are. I'm just saying that that type of person tends to have some personal problems.
Yeah, let's say a higher level. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, again, not all of them. Not all of them. It's just that I can see why that would, say, attract people who are problematic in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, it's I imagine that's why you have several stories similar to this of reality TV, where it's, yeah, it comes out that these people have done something horrifying. And it's like, yeah, because you barely vetted them. They're not a professional performer. And you stuck them on TV and made them a star.
Yeah.
It's not the best thing to do.
No, it's like, you know, Dave, I don't have a lot of shame. Obviously, we both chose entertainment as career, so we probably have a lower shame threshold than a lot of people.
Yeah, of course.
But like, on Twitter, I'll just like see a tweet that I think is funny and I'll share it. And then someone will like inevitably be like, oh, you know, this guy did this horrible thing. And I was like, well, no, I didn't. It was just a random person on Twitter. But then I feel bad about it for the rest of the day. It's incredible that this guy can be like, oh, we filmed a whole several hour long TV special with like a man who beat the shit out of his girlfriend and has a restraining order against him. Ah!
Like, right. Just that complete lack of shame.
Yeah, it's incredible. Amazing.
I envy it. Yeah.
Yeah. It would make some things easier, like getting access to a Lamborghini.
Yeah, that's getting money.
Getting money. It makes that a lot easier.
Yeah, and then you make YouTube videos about telling people how to get money, mm-hmm. and you tell them to buy your book, mm-hmm. which also will help them pick up women.
That's another kind of guy without much shame. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, this does lead to all that, because the pickup artist culture is heavily related to reality TV show, and that show with, what was it, Mystery? What was it called?
I assume it was Mystery, because that's one of them guys.
Yeah, he definitely was in a bunch of reality shit. So when this all blows up and there's this big backlash against Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire, everyone kind of assumes that Darnell is going to get fired. Fox cancels the rebroadcast of the show, and they had been talking about turning it into a series because it was a huge hit, and they declined to. And they promise never. Fox promises to never be a part of any similar show in the future, which is extremely funny. Like, wow. Yeah, Fox, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
So, and it's worth noting that even while the heat is on, other networks, as soon as Fox is like, well, I guess we weren't turning this into a show, like UPN offers to buy it.
Of course.
Other TV networks are like, well, we'll make it into a show. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, we're
desperate. I'm UPN. All we have is Voyager reruns right now.
Right. Like, we're UPN. Yeah. Please help us. That was actually their motto at the time. Yeah, most of the people listening to this podcast right now are like, I don't know what UPN is.
That's because this episode of our podcast will have more viewers than UPN got in its entire time on the air.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Mike Fleiss turns UPN down. He's like, nah, I don't want to give this guy to you. And I got a better idea. So Fleiss, who had produced the show, takes a variation of the pitch that he and Darnell had made to ABC. Now, they clean it up a little for Middle America, right? And they relaunch Who Wants to Be a Multimillionaire with some changes as a new series called, you ready for this, Dave? The Bachelor.
Yeah,
baby. Yeah, that's where that starts.
Yep.
Yeah. And obviously, The Bachelor is a lot less problematic, although not to there's so much lore in all of these shows. I'm sure people will be like, no, there's the, like, yeah, of course, a bunch of fucked up shit happened.
Right.
Too.
It's tough. I've never seen a single episode of The Bachelor.
No, no. And this is not about The Bachelor, but it's funny where it comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Big Brother comes out later in 2000. It's after Who Wants to Be a Multimillionaire. And it's actually, this is interesting, Big Brother is an import of a Dutch show that's itself inspired by the real world, which is like this thing that increasingly, like up to this day, is big in reality, where like some foreign country will make a show that's inspired by like these other shows, and then like we'll steal that idea, and then that'll, like, I don't know, it's fine.
Right, I've noticed that, like, yeah. I assume it's all owned by the same people, but it seems like you just have to change like a few words.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, honestly, there's not really a meaningful difference between like what they did with The Office, you know, like that's not fucked up. It's just like the way art works. Like, right. Oh, some foreigner painted this thing. Like, I'll paint a thing like that.
It reminds me of
like
game shows where it's like you can legally make a slightly different version of this and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, this is fine. I just bring it up because I find it interesting, not because it's like bad that they imported the idea behind this Dutch show. Like, who gives a fuck? So
yeah,
the war on terror starts not long after, you know, this whole period of time. And
sure,
as it gets down to the business of just like fucking up a bunch of stuff, reality TV is becoming the biggest thing in US media. The Bachelor is a titanic hit. Basically overnight, it becomes ABC's top rated show among 18 to 49 year olds, otherwise known as the demographic with money. Well,
yeah,
that's what we knew it as in 2000.
The cool demographic that yeah. smokes cigarettes.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That was in 2000, especially smoking
yeah,
some cigarettes.
Of course.
So despite the promises they'd made in the wake of their disaster with Rockwell, Fox committed themselves to reality TV more than any other network. Jennifer Posner writes, by February 2003, Fox was devoting a whopping 41% and ABC 33% of their sweeps offerings to reality shows. These percentages increased over the years, limiting the number of quality comedies and dramas available to viewers and reducing opportunities for union-represented actors, writers, and crew. Instead of firing their previously shamed reality guru, Fox promoted Darnell to executive vice president of alternative programming. So They get to bust some unions and give a creep a good job. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, that's the American dream right there. Mm-hmm. Good for them.
It is nice. Yeah. That is we will not be getting into it enough, but that is a big part of like why reality is so popular with producers and stuff.
Unions.
Like high level producers is like, well, you can get away from a lot of union shit with this.
That is very true. Mm-hmm. You have people who work for a lot less.
And you can cut out the Writers
more.
Guild, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a real bummer.
Mm-hmm. It's very fun.
Mm-hmm.
So with that August title behind him, Darnell helped to bring to life a number of the most noteworthy early reality shows. There was 2001's Temptation Island, in which real-life couples were separated and tempted into adultery. unbelievable premise. Joe Millionaire, in which a bunch of women dated a guy they thought was a millionaire, only to realize he wasn't.
Right, isn't the twist at the end they give him $1 million, too?
They split, like, it's either $1 million or $500,000 between him and the woman who agreed to go out with him after learning he's not rich. Like, if she agrees to still go out with him, then they both get money.
I don't know what the moral is there.
Yeah, I mean, there's no moral. It's Mike Darnell. This guy doesn't have morals.
Right,
to
it's putting
he
bugs
does.
In a jar.
Yeah.
And just seeing what happens.
Yeah, it's just making TV. In 2004's The Swan, a bunch of women are given plastic surgery and other risky surgical procedures so they can compete in a beauty pageant. Oh, man. Mike Darnell, baby.
He's the Chuck Barris of fucking reality TV is what I'm getting from this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
he just sat there all day and
mm-hmm. he just came up with horrible things to do.
Yeah, and killed for the government on the side.
My favorite show he did was the short-lived series Mr. Personality, in which a woman dates a bunch of men wearing masks that they can't take off until the show ends. And so she has to pick the woman she wants to be with without seeing them without a mask.
They have one of those now, too.
Probably.
They have like a blind date one.
But Dave,
yeah.
This one was hosted by Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, shit. I mean, what we know about her now, it's like, good for her.
I'm not going to condemn her for like, you got to like, what other kind of, for one thing, what other kind of jobs are open to you as Monica Lewinsky in the early 2000s? Like,
right.
Not a lot of hiring opportunities after going through that ringer. So yeah, get what you can, Monica.
Yeah.
But it's incredible. It's like the opening to this
Holy
show is extremely
shit.
Funny, and we're just going to play it
play
now.
Play it, please.
Now, friend or foe, who will go? It's the season finale of Mr. Personality.
This season on Mr. Personality, Haley Valentine Arp, a 26-year-old single career woman from Atlanta, was introduced to 20 eligible men, their faces covered by masks.
Hopefully, it won't matter
oh
what he looks
God.
Like, because he's touched my heart in a different kind of way.
They look like
the men range from unemployed to millionaire.
Peacemaker masks.
And from NFL mascots.
Well, hold on. Do yourself a favor. Look up the other Fox show, Secrets of Magic Revealed, with the masked magician.
Oh, no.
I'm almost certain they just reused those masks. I haven't looked in a while. I'm going by memory.
But it looks
for people who aren't watching this, They look like servants at an Eyes Wide Shut orgy.
Yeah.
They all have the same masks.
They all kind of look like MF Doom, but with a little bit of like, like the fucking Skeletor from the Masters of the Universe movie mixed in.
I'm shocked that they all have the same mask.
It's so funny.
Here's more.
Motivational speaker with a strategy of mind control.
Ever so often, I kept hearing the number 17, 17.
80% of the way we get influenced is really unconscious.
Haley was forced to send 10 suitors packing. Their masks were removed.
I think this totally sucks.
The remaining 10 were given new colored masks, and the competition kicked in.
We're gonna beat his ass.
Haley watched as a luau unraveled into Boys Gone Wild.
That's what I'm talking about. Oh, God. This is my lovely bedroom.
And two men eliminated themselves.
Dude!
That's what I'm just gonna have to do.
I can't do this.
So, another bit of context.
Incredible.
Like most reality TV, this is men wearing tuxes and masks that takes place in what looks like a like upper middle class like McMansion.
Yeah.
That's what's amazing about it too, is it's like an Eyes Wide Shut orgy on a budget.
Yeah.
Like it's I'm not saying I have this kind of money, obviously, but it's like this is like someone who owns like a tow truck company, like several their house. Which again, nothing against that, but I'm just trying to,
it's like an Eyes Wide Shut party, but all of the food is like from Kirkland, you know, it's like Kirkland, it's like a Kirkland brand rich people orgy.
Right. It's not wealthy. Like these people have money, but they don't have that much money.
Can we play the next clip, please?
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I picked this one cause it's got a little bit of that sweet Lewinsky action that I know everybody's looking for.
Right.
She really is just kind of barely in it.
Right.
That's
Chris,
Monica behind the two.
Time to announce.
Talking now.
Haley, he had initially said that he took your breath away and that you could get lost in his green eyes. But you also said he seemed a little too smooth and a bit calculating.
This is the mind control guy.
He's a motivational speaker and life coach for teenagers.
Oh,
he's 30 years old in the dark green mask. Meet Chris Berg.
Very
wow.
Fine. I love it.
Chris Berg, who's into mind control and motivational
speaking. Yeah,
There's no way he didn't die in a bar in Florida like 10 years ago.
He either died in a bar in
Florida.
That or he was part of the CIA's enhanced interrogation program in Iraq. Like one of the two is background.
Yeah. It's one or the other. Either he is in fact good at what he does or he's been stabbed in the stomach at a bar in Florida.
What an incredible show.
Holy shit.
It's so funny.
It's like junk food because as soon as he was like, I'm going to take off my mask, I'm like, here we fucking go. I can't wait to see this fucker.
Yeah, let's see this weirdo.
And then he was just some honky.
He's just some honky. Yeah.
Yeah. It's some fucking honky.
It's so funny.
It's such a ripoff.
I think it got like 5 episodes. Like which
I'm
is why Monica
all.
Lewinsky is not a staple of reality TV to this day, which is tragic. You can see that he's just like throwing shit at a dartboard. Like, all right, let's put him in masks and let's get who's famous that people wouldn't expect to see in a show. Monica Lewinsky. Offer her some money. Put her in the show. It didn't work. Whatever.
They probably had a list. They probably like at one point William Shatner was going to host. You know, like it's probably just like we have a list of people who we know will do it.
Yeah, we know we'll do it. They need work and like people will be like, well, what? I guess I'll try this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. So yeah, and it's worth, it is kind of interesting to me that, like, having just gone through this, the first reality show ever was, like, pretty complex and intelligent entertainment for its day, and there's some, like, real cultural value there, but it winds up as this, you know?
Because reality TV and documentaries could be the same thing, right?
Right, right.
Like, if you're just documenting something that you find interesting, a slice of, you know, life in America, like that family, like that makes sense. It's just, they realized quickly that's boring.
And yeah, it's like, even you can see in shows that are still around, like The Real World, when it debuted in 1992, it dealt with a lot of shit like AIDS and drug addiction and like LGBT issues in a way that was a lot of folks will argue, at least I'm not a comprehensive, I don't know much about the real world, but people who are critics of culture will argue was more intelligent than it is today. Cultural critic LaToya Peterson writes that while growth and development were early on parts of the real world, in later days it became, quote, specifically cast for racists, assholes, and agitators. It's like a formula. Every season has some huge racial altercation. Every season has some kind of woman trying to sleep her way into self-esteem. Every season has a guy coping with a breakup angrily.
Right. Again, they sought out people who were unstable.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they gave them money and fame.
Well, and also, as we saw with the very first, with like Darnell's first show, and Posner notes that like a big part of this change is that folks follow Darnell's lead in baiting advocacy groups like the National Organization of Women or the NAACP or GLAAD with content that where people were like have controversies, which will get these groups to weigh in, which will cause like journalists to write about this controversy, which generates press and views. And that's a big part of it too.
It's hate clicks.
Yeah, it's hate clicks. It's all about hate clicks.
It's triggering the libs, and it's all built upon the same idea, which is that like any reaction is a reaction, therefore it succeeds. Even if the reaction is someone saying, that's not funny. They're like, we did it. And it's like, did you though? Like,
it's funny to me that kind of what's happening here is the way bullies work, right? Which is like, if you react to them at all, you're giving them what they want.
Right.
That we have just applied to like all of culture now. And reality is kind of how that happens, where it's like, well, I guess the way everything should work is that if you get people to react by being shitty, then the person being shitty wins.
Right, exactly. Like, if you run a show that's just someone going out in public and taking dumps in the ground at a mall.
All right, now, Dave, I told you that in confidence. We have our pitch meeting with VH1 in a week. And
look, baby, you can have multiple versions of that. It's like Volcano and Deep Impact. Mm-hmm. You can never get too much of Mall Shitter. That's going to be gold.
And its spinoff, Who Wants to Watch a Multi-Millionaire Shit in a fucking a Spencer's Gifts.
Exactly. Oh, that'd be great, because people at first they'd be like, something smells like shit, but they'd look and there's all the novelty shit.
There's all the fake poop
and they're
in
like,
the
well,
Spencer's Gifts. Yeah.
Which one is it? Like, one of them is, God, I want to go into a Spencer's gift and leave a real dump next to all the novelty ones. They wouldn't find it for months.
Anyway, this is going to be stolen by Fox in like a week and make somebody $47 million.
I mean, that could legitimately be like a Jackass.
It could
sketch,
be.
I
it could be.
Like. Yeah.
In 2001, VH1 launched its Celebreality block. The linchpin of this was The Surreal Life, based off the real world in which people who were only celebrities in the loosest sense of the world, like at this point, Flavor Flav, would live together on camera. Flavor Flav became a lot more famous later, but he was, you know, this is kind of what like blew him up into being a reality star.
Sure.
It was huge. The production company behind it, 51 Minds Entertainment, started spinning off. Next, from Entertainment Weekly, quote, that's when they found Megan Hauserman, a former Playboy model who appeared on season 3 of the WB-turned-CW reality competition, Beauty and the Geek. She and her partner, Alan Scooter Zackheim, took home the $250,000 prize. With her bombshell looks and sassy wit, Hauserman became a fan favorite on Rock of Love with Brett Michaels. Think The Bachelor, but with Poison's Michaels as its prize. And its spinoffs... I Love Money and Rock of Love, Charm School. 51 Minds decided to give the model her own show, Megan Wants a Millionaire. The funny thing about Megan was her stated ambition, which was to marry a millionaire, says Cronin. So we said, what if we filled a house with millionaires and they were competing for you as their trophy wife?
Here we go. This is, I sort of know what's to come here.
Yeah. Now, this does not sound like a TV show premise to me, Dave. It sounds like a spell to end the world. But a lot of studio executives were convinced it would be a hit. So VH1 greenlights this motherfucker. In the casting notice, they asked for, quote, single men of the highest degree with a net worth of $1 million or more. Now, rather than rely entirely on traditional casting, they sent producers to nightclubs to throw parties where rich guys would audition by just like being at a nightclub. These sound like the worst parties imaginable.
That sounds like a nightmare. Imagine working a service job at one of those parties What an absolute, you could write a horror movie just about one of these nights.
There aren't a lot of ethical reasons to make and deploy a chlorine gas bomb using the cleaning chemicals commonly found in any bar, but this right. would have been one, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't think they would have arrested you, yeah.
No, the guy just...
It would have been self-defense.
We all agreed this was self-defense. Yeah. So, yeah, they do this thing. And one of the men they find through this process is Ryan Jenkins, a 32-year-old real estate developer from Las Vegas. Good
sounds
so
like
far.
A perfectly rounded individual that I'm sure will have no problems around him.
Now, one casting producer later recalled of him, Ryan Jenkins had one of the best personalities on this planet. He was intriguing. He knew it. He wasn't the best looking guy in the world. He just had this charisma. So all reality shows have a process for vetting candidates.
Mm-hmm.
This was clearly necessary after the first Millionaire show blew up due to its lead male being an abusive monster with a restraining order against him. Every network and production company, though, did this in a different way. The most rigorous shows included the kind of, like, applications included the kind of information you'd need to get a mortgage. You'd have to file out every address you'd ever had, every job you'd had. There were psychiatric screeners, ink blot tests, etc. Entertainment Weekly continues. The other key component is the criminal background check, which involves, in part, searching court and arrest records in every county a candidate has ever lived. When it came time to run checks on all of Megan's potential millionaires, VH1 turned to Collective Intelligence, a Washington state-based company the network had been working with since 2003. But Collective only specialized in U.S.-based criminal searches, so for Jenkins, a Canadian citizen, the company subcontracted out the search to another firm, Straight Line International. Ryan Jenkins' record came back clear, and he was invited to join the cast. So this is gonna go good. This is gonna end
seems
well.
Fine. Yeah. He's a Canadian, you know. They're nice people.
Sure.
No Megan, problems there.
Megan Wants to Marry a Millionaire launched on August 2nd, 2009, and it is one of the cringiest shows I've ever experienced. Let's watch the introduction.
Okay.
To live a life of milk and honey with a man who takes her there. Gentleman extraordinaire, Megan wants a millionaire, and what Megan wants, Megan gets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What Megan wants, Megan gets.
That's the good stuff, Dave.
So, wait, you already explained who Megan is, right?
Yeah, she's a Playboy model whose primary ambition is to marry a millionaire.
I still feel like saying, who does she think she is? It's just like, my God. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, good for her, I guess.
I mean,
I don't
no,
know why I'm saying that.
Definitely not good
I
for
mean,
her.
I mean, good for her for wanting a millionaire and knowing what she wants. And
I guess.
And I assume this will end really happy with her getting a millionaire.
Yeah. I mean, I think she gets rich eventually. So there you go. Yeah. So Ryan Jenkins in this episode, like the first, it's interminably long. She's just like meeting all of these guys. It's unbelievably awkward. Some of them are like creepy old dudes who are like really weird and it's whatever. Like it's the kind, they're all creepy in some way. They're all the kind of people who would show up on a show with this premise. So it's horrible. And in his introduction, Ryan Jenkins describes himself as, quote, a little bit of Prince Charming, a little bit of a bad boy. And here's him showing up on screen for the first time.
Okay.
Hello, Megan.
Look, we're matching already.
We are matching. Have you met any Canadians before?
Never.
Well, it's about time, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Can I let you in on a little secret?
Please do. Ryan whispers in my ear, you're going to love Canadian bacon.
Oh. Oh, fuck. Fuck.
That was a dick thing, right?
I think.
Probably.
I just lost a year of my life.
Yeah, that takes a lot out of you.
My God, just the facial hair alone
it's horrible.
Illegal.
I mean, this was, you know, the early 2000s. Everything
doesn't
was worse.
Doesn't matter.
But yeah.
No, I can't defend it. I know it was a different time back then.
Mm-hmm.
But still, that facial hair. You're going to love Canadian bacon.
Was he trying to say his dick's flat? Because...
Yeah, flat and...
Flat and not quite cooked right.
Yeah.
Here's
the... Here's the thing. If he was actually just talking about Canadian bacon, that would be delightful, right? Mm-hmm. If he just wants to, like, cook her some Canadian
bacon.
But
Dave, sure. He was not.
No.
He was not. But that would have made him a winner. He probably could have gotten all the way to the top that way. Mm. But no, yep. It's probably, yeah, about his, like, tapeworm dick, like his mm-hmm. flat, mm-hmm. floppy,
his
like,
flat,
weird...
floppy tapeworm dick.
Is it Canadian bacon, like, round, too? Like, it's like a...
It's wrong. It's not right. Yeah. It's like poutine. You're not supposed to put it in your body. It just exists because we, you know, because America, the one time we pull our punches, it's with Canada. And look at this nonsense that exists right. now.
Look what we let happen.
I'm going to need Garrison to fact check everything you just said.
So Ryan advanced to the final round of the show. Hauserman liked him, although she saw some quote-unquote red flags, like the fact that his Rolex was fake and that he only brought a single pair of pants for 5 weeks of filming.
Amazing. All right. I wish I could...
What a millionaire.
I wish I could act better mm-hmm. than him, but I do only own a single pair of pants.
Dave, I know this about you, having lived with you, but also, you're not a millionaire.
That's true. I'm not. You're right.
Definitely not.
Yeah, I can't afford multiple pairs of pants. You're right. That's mm-hmm. why. Mm-hmm. That's why mm-hmm. I only have one pair. Mm-hmm. I'm the victim here. You're right. So yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it is weird for him.
Mm-hmm. It's weird for him. Yeah. So she thought he was sweet, and she almost picked him as the winner. She looked him up on Facebook one night during shooting and got his phone number and called him privately to tell him she planned to pick him. But Ooh. Then she told the show's producers what she planned to do, and they were like, oh, no, absolutely not. They justified this as saying he wasn't likable and was just putting on a show for her. And she eventually agreed to send him home. Quote, he was really upset, and I was upset also.
So that's a shame.
She planned to call him once filming was over and explain that she'd just been doing what her producers wanted. Right. The show flopped, but Hauserman remained in contact with Ryan. He told her that after she sent him home, he was so upset that, quote, I went to Vegas and I met a girl. As is normally the case on reality shows, producers right. hired several of the failed contestants of this show for other projects. And so 4 years later, in 2009, Ryan Jenkins is cast for a show called I Love Money 3, vying sure. for a $250,000 prize because, you know, he's not actually a millionaire and he could really use the cash. Entertainment Weekly continues. He kept calling her on the phone, his wife, saying, I'm going to win this, and you and I are going to have the life I've always promised, recalls Mark Cronin, co-founder of 51 Minds Entertainment, the production company behind Money, Megan the Surreal Life, and the majority of VH1's wildly successful celebrity shows of that era. Then he would ask her, where were you last night? Because he's in Mexico shooting the show, and she lives in Las Vegas. He was very jealous and very suspicious of her. We were actually making a story of it on the show. We were like, look at this guy. He's obsessed with this model he married, Cronin continues. It was funny until it wasn't funny at all. You want to guess why it stops being funny?
I have an idea. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty, it's not funny. On August 15th, 2009, soon after I Love Money 3 wrapped, Fior, his wife's strangled and mutilated body was found stuffed in a suitcase, tossed into a dumpster in Buena Park, California.
I wonder what happened.
Yeah. So Jenkins goes on the run. And as this all gets public, TMZ finds out that he has an extensive criminal record, including an arrest in 2005 for assaulting a girlfriend in Calgary, which VH1 and 51 Mind said was not on his background check. Jenkins eventually kills himself in a hotel room in British Columbia on August 23rd. And yeah, it's this whole big story, big, ugly story for the reality TV industry.
Yeah.
Collective Intelligence gets most of the blame for this, and they wind up laying off their workforce. The whole nightmare reportedly leads to an increased willingness for production companies and networks to pay for thorough background checks. So that's good.
It feels like everybody in America should go to jail for a day.
It feels like we all got to go to jail for that one.
Yeah, it's just like our culture, everything. Everybody should
feel
bad. You just
clock in for your shift and then you're the guard next because like we got to get through everybody.
Right. We should all feel fucking ashamed.
Yeah, new refugee comes into the country and it's like, hey, sorry it's been so tough over in Ethiopia or Ukraine. glad you're here. You got to go to jail for a day now.
For a day. Yeah.
There was this show like 15 years ago.
Yeah. No one stopped it from happening.
Nobody stopped it.
Obvious that this person was, yeah.
Look, we know you're new here, but every American has some collective responsibility for this show.
Right. I mean, listen, in our defense, he did say he was kind of a bad boy. So
this would fall under the kind of a bad boy aegis.
Yeah. He's like, that's what he actually whispered. He's like in her ear. He's like, I'm a murderer.
I am going to be a murderer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my fucking God.
Now, the good news, Dave, is that sketchy violent dudes getting through vetting is no longer the main threat faced by reality shows. We're going to talk about what is in part two of this series. Dave, how you feeling?
Yeah.
How you liking reality?
How am I liking reality? Yeah. You know, mixed feelings always on reality.
Yeah.
So, you know, can't complain, but really, I don't have many compliments for it either.
Yeah, I feel the same about reality as I do about reality TV, which is, I feel like we could do better.
Yeah.
I feel like we could do better, you know? But you know who's doing great, Dave, is your podcast network, Gamefully Unemployed. Where people can listen to hypecasts and hear about what's coming out in Hollywood. They can listen to Fox Mulder is a Maniac and learn how the FBI definitely really functions.
It's our own Behind the Bastards for Fox Mulder and Fox Mulder only.
It's so detailed, in fact, that if you listen to every episode of Fox Mulder is a Maniac, you are legally an FBI agent and can carry out raids and stings on whoever
it's
you
true.
Want. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the government might say otherwise, but it's like a little wink wink.
What do they know? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just fucking with you.
Yeah. So, yeah, everybody check that out. Mm-hmm. Gamefully Unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
Patreon.com. I can do it. Patreon.com/Gamefully Unemployed.
Yep.
We're on Twitter as well. Gamefully Un, I think. I don't know. Just Google
something
us.
Like that. Something
Just
like
Google.
That.
Yeah.
All right. Google them and then Google yourself, but like in a sexual manner.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Your name plus nudes.
So we just let
nudes.
That happen. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Google your name plus nudes. See what happens.
Yeah.
You'll get something. You won't be happy you got it, but you'll get something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this has been the podcast.
Yeah.
I've been Robert Evans. You've been David Bell. And
That's
Sophie
true.
Has been disappointed in me.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.